This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Use code GRACE to receive $10 off plus free shipping. Go to EdenPure.com to order today. Enjoy the podcast.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Hey, it's not the Howie Carr Show. It's my show. And I brought my own music.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith. The last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. The Archduchess of the AM airwaves. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Get ready, Boston. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show, week two. We've already had some great guests thus far, and more are on their way. But before we get to our guests, I did want to open up the call lines because I'm curious what people think about this shift. We all knew it was happening for a long time. Big tech was going to censor people. They were doing it a lot during the lead up to the election, whether it was Hunter Biden or just the little warning signs they give you on all the articles. I started to notice if I wanted to retweet my article from Howie's account, it would say, "Are you sure? You might want to read this first. This girl sounds like a crazy person." And I would go, yeah, I'm sure. But they did a lot of small things, and they really started putting a lot of those warnings on everything Donald Trump tweeted. They would say, you know, this is, you know, there's no evidence to prove this. This has been wildly debunked and all those things. But this past weekend was, I'm going to say it's almost a good thing it happened like it did, because there's just no question anymore. This is the road we are now on, where if they don't like something you say, they can deplatform you and silence you. And I was actually laughing because some of the media people were complaining about they hadn't heard from Trump in a while. You know, like, well, we haven't heard from Trump and Pence. Why aren't they talking? Why aren't they? You're silencing them on everything from Twitter to Facebook to Spotify to Pinterest. What are they supposed to do? Do you want to hear from them or not? Because if you want to hear from Trump, the easiest way is just to let him back on Twitter.
So President Trump spoke before heading to Alamo today. He just spoke to reporters. He just gave a brief statement on the way to the White House. Did not see it on any television. I tried to find it on Twitter. Couldn't find it. Tried to find it. I Googled it. Couldn't find the audio. And I finally had to track down an NPR station that linked to a local station that put it up. So even beyond that, they're not even letting his videos out anywhere now. It's crazy. It took me 25 minutes to find a minute sound clip.
I wonder if they'll just start erasing him from the history books. They always talk about how this is going to be the worst segment of our history in, you know, the same old, same old. But I wonder if they'll just go the extra mile and just pretend he never existed.
They're just going to Photoshop Arnold Schwarzenegger into the first 8 seasons of The Apprentice. They're going to cut out his scene in Home Alone 2. That's gone, you know.
Right, all those rap songs, they'll have to, you know, take those down. But Jared, I think Twitter just made a very brave announcement. They're standing up for what they truly believe in. Do you have that tweet by chance?
I have it right here.
Read it for us, please.
Ahead of the Ugandan election, we're hearing reports that internet service providers are being ordered to block social media and messaging apps.
Wait, can you say that again? They're hearing reports about what?
That ahead of the Ugandan election, internet service providers are being ordered to block social media and messaging apps.
Oh my gosh.
Twitter strongly condemns internet shutdowns. They are hugely harmful, violate basic human rights, and the principles of the hashtag open internet.
I am at a point now where I'm without speech. I have no speech. The level of hypocrisy is just mind-blowing. You start to feel crazy.
We were for stifling free speech before we were against stifling free speech.
I mean, they're definitely for it. It's just a matter of time until they turn on people who are right now considered woke, because these rebellions, they don't end well. You can ask Robespierre, but these people who are so woke and their ideas are all A-OK with the mainstream media and everyone, they're eventually going to not be accepted by the Jack Dorseys of the world. It's just a matter of time, but they can't see past Donald Trump. I said this yesterday. They cannot see past Orange Man Bad. Everything that they do is just the ends justify the means if it's going to damage Donald Trump. And if you need any further evidence, this story, we talked about it in the first hour, but it deserves to be talked about over and over again. Another story from Project Veritas. So what Project Veritas tends to do is they put in like plants to these, whether it's campaigns or TV stations, and they pretend to be liberals and they get on the good side of some of the higher ups and they record what they're really saying. And none of it's surprising. I mean, we all know how much they hate us, right? If you don't understand how much Don Lemon hates you by watching him call you a credulous boomer rube and say you can't point out certain countries on a map, then you're nicer than me, because I've known these people hated me for a very long time. But this guy, PBS principal counsel, his name is Michael Beller. The stuff he said about Republicans, I mean, it makes Rick Wilson look very kind to us. He said, "We go for all the Republican voters and Homeland Security will take their children away. We'll put them into the re-education camps. Enlightenment camps. They're nice. They have Sesame Street characters in the classrooms and they watch PBS all day." This is my favorite part. "Americans are so bleeping dumb. You know, most people are dumb. It's good to live in a place, Washington, D.C., where people are educated and know stuff. Could you imagine if you lived in one of those other towns or cities where everybody's just stupid? What's great is that COVID is spiking in all the red states right now. So that's great. A lot of them," meaning red state voters, "are sick and dying. So we're the stupid ones." But this guy who's getting recorded talking about throwing Molotov cocktails and putting Republicans in re-education camps, he's the smart one. He's the tolerant one. He's the woke one. He's probably the guy calling for unity on his platforms. He calls for unity on his Twitter, I'm sure, but when he's behind the scenes, he does not call for unity. Guys, call in 844-500-4242. We'll take some of your calls on what you think about this. But now Twitter is condemning, you know, internet shutdowns. They've officially blocked Donald Trump from Twitter. And then Apple, Amazon, and Google decided that they would also take Parler off of their apps. Like, you can't download it. To be honest, I'm not sure exactly how all this stuff works. I'm not a tech person. All I know is I go on the Apple App Store and I download stuff, and Parler was not there anymore. So now they have to find a new Apple or Amazon or Google to join so that they can be downloaded by people who are Trump supporters or conservatives or just people who like free speech. It's really, really scary. Just a side note, because we have a really busy hour planned. Two state lawmakers opt against accepting pay raise. This is a feel-good story. Four of the six statewide elected officials on Beacon Hill have rejected bumps in their salary this year. I'm reading now from the Lowell Sun. Despite being entitled to increases worth as much as $9,000, but only two lawmakers, both Democrats, have turned down the raises that went into effect in the new year. Some of these prices, or salaries, I should say, Jared, they're pretty, pretty good. Auditor Suzanne Bump, meanwhile, said she would accept the roughly $8,740 pay salary increase. And a spokesperson for Secretary of State William Galvin said the Brighton Democrat hasn't taken any action on the pay raise and was still collecting the same amount of pay in his biweekly check as he did last year. She goes on to say he has other stuff on the top of his mind. But it's interesting because it seems like such an easy decision, you know, during a pandemic where Charlie Baker and other government leaders have killed the economy. It seems that if there was ever going to be a year where you weren't going to take the bump, this would be the year. And it says in the story that a few people decided they'd take it and donate it to charity. But I think you just have to not take it, because then you're on like paragraph 10 of this story, and it's kind of an afterthought. You got to be one of the ones who they say, Jared Diglio didn't take the pay raise, said no, stood his ground.
And full disclosure, I haven't read this story. I don't know any of the people involved, but I am curious how many people who turned down this raise are double dipping and can afford to lose it. Because a lot of these positions, you get multiple paychecks to get multiple pensions. That's kind of a scam.
Yeah, but you know what, Jared? Right now, with the little faith I have in Beacon Hill Hacks, I'm giving them the thumbs up either way. Sure, they could be double dipping, but I still am happy that they didn't take it. One guy actually, one of the guys who didn't take it, he said that he's a single guy, and he said he understands why some people did take it. They have kids, they have families. But he was just explaining, like, it's a really weird time to take a pay raise when so many people are struggling. And then to a larger extent, you think about Donald Trump hasn't taken a pay raise in his 4 years in office. Nobody ever says anything good about that. I mean, I've read piece after piece about how it might seem like Donald Trump didn't take a paycheck, but really it's all a tax scheme. And sure, whatever. I'm sure there's, you know, ways that things work out for him. He's a business guy. But can you imagine if Nancy Pelosi didn't take a paycheck? She would be... I can't think of a world where she has more press than she already does, but she would be the belle of the ball.
She'd have to eat poor people ice cream.
And we haven't heard, is Joe Biden not going to take his paycheck?
The one from China or the one for being president?
I'm going to say the one for being president. I think that's the one right now. Heard. The China one, I mean, I can't control that. It's out of my hands. But that's a question I would like to be asked by all of the reporters who talk to Joe Biden. I know it's more tempting to say things like, what do you think about the inauguration that's happening with your dog Major? Or, you know, what kind of socks are you wearing today? But I would like to know if he's going to take his pay or if he's going to donate it to a different cause. And if he does, I'll say it on the show. I'll be proud of him. But I just, I always thought that was funny that was such a, well, of course he's not going to take a paycheck. I mean, Donald Trump's probably lost money in the last 4 years with his businesses. But either way, no one ever gave him even a little bit of a, that's pretty cool that you never took a paycheck. They just immediately, well, it's not what it looks like. Well, I'll be curious to see if anyone decides to do that now. My friends at Eden Pure have done it again. You can get the Thunderstorm Air Purifier at the lowest price offered to my listeners. I'm holding it up right now for the camera. With code word GRACE, the Thunderstorm is available for under $90 and shipping is free. Eden Pure is extending their New Year's sale for another week or until supplies run out. The Thunderstorm is a small device you can hold in your hand and plug into the wall to purify the air from any odor. This could be pet odor, kitchen smells, tobacco, or that damp smell you may have in your basement. No filters are needed, and other units can start at $600. We love them here in the office to fight Howie's fish cooking smells, Jared's Indian food that sometimes smells a little funky. The Thunderstorm does not take up floor space. It's quiet. It's awesome. Everyone loves it. Take advantage of this one-week-only sale and experience for yourself what all the listeners, Howie, and advertisers are raving about. Don't go to Amazon. Go to EdenPure.com and put in code word GRACE. That's EdenPure.com, code word GRACE. Shipping is free. We will be back with your calls. I see some people lined up. 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Listening to The Grace Curley Show. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Grace Curley Show. We got full lines here. We're going to take some of these calls, but first, we got to do the poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Genesis 950. Use Genesis 950 for all your cleaning needs. Use code word GRACE to save $10 and to get free shipping. Go to Genesis950.com. Genesis 950, a lot cheaper than replacing your carpets. That is very, very true. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Going forward, will you still use Amazon?
No.
62% of the audience say no. They will not.
I'm going to really try not to. That's my more honest answer, but I'm really going to make an effort to support local businesses and just really support anyone but Amazon or Apple or Google. But it's hard. I mean, they run a lot of the industries in this country. It's depressing, but we got to try our best, guys. Jim, you're next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Jim?
I know you're talking about the social media thing, but I just wanted to alert you guys to the Chuck Schumer press conference this afternoon. It was great. He was going on and on and on about how the president should be removed from office, and some woman steps right in front of him and just starts ripping him up and down.
Really? I saw that he was having a press conference here, but I wasn't able to listen to it. We will look into that, Jim. Chuck Schumer. I mean, and Jim, I'm sure she had some good points. Do you remember what Chuck Schumer said during all the Supreme Court justice hearings? He was saying some very insightful and insightful in the sense that they're going to incite violence things about the Supreme Court justices. I can't remember the exact quote, but I remember a lot of people, even Joe Scarborough, saying he should walk things back. He is not someone who's afraid of dangerous rhetoric.
She called him an anti-Semite. And then, of course, I'm watching Martha McCallum, and she cut her right off, so I didn't get a chance to see his reaction. I was trying to find it online, but you guys ought to check it out and see if you can get some cuts. It was beautiful.
Well, we'll look into that. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. 844-500-4242. Don't forget, guys, we have Carol Markowitz from the New York Post and Spectator US on the other side talking about Andrew Cuomo and vaccine rollouts. I wanted to talk here a little bit about this impeachment proceedings, because the article they filed, they are saying that Trump incited violence. And the quote they use, we're not even gonna read it, we're gonna play it. This is the quote that they think Donald Trump said at his rally, the Save America rally, that incited the riots.
I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard.
So peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. Now here's an interesting take. This is by Nick Arama. He's from Red State. He writes, here's the thing. You can say a lot of things about his rally speech, and there's no question that he railed about the election. But the last time I checked, questioning the election wasn't a crime, although the Democrats are trying to make it one. There were legitimate constitutional questions about whether state officials were operating within the bounds of the laws and rules set by the state legislatures. When they do not, that's unconstitutional. There were sworn affidavits about irregularities. Nothing that Trump said to the Georgia Secretary of State was about doing anything illegal. Meanwhile, if we want to talk about inciting violence, we could point to the Democrats who have encouraged violence against Trump officials, like Representative Maxine Waters. We all remember that sound. But it's true. Not only does it not really hold up, but he said specifically, peacefully and patriotically. That's a hard sentence to turn into, he told them to go break glass and storm the Capitol. Those two things don't really add up. But Pelosi's going to go through with it because, again, it's not about actually accomplishing anything. And that is what has dominated the Democrats for the last 4 years. Nothing has been about accomplishing policy or passing legislation. Everything has been about theater and making Trump, and what they've done is they've made Trump into this larger than life guy, because every single thing they do revolves around him. And so what I'm most curious about is, I hope that they don't go through with, I hope impeachment stuff doesn't go on for Joe Biden's first 100 days, but I'm so curious how the left is going to react when Donald Trump's not there anymore. Because it's going to be, I'm sure he's not going to be quiet, but not everything can be his fault when he's a private citizen. It just can't be. You can't be writing, "Dear Diary, I hate Donald Trump," every single night, Jim Acosta. Eventually, we're going to have to move on from this guy. Guys, when we come back, Carol Markowitz is joining us, and then the one and only Howie Carr. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
All right, so we got a little more information on that heckler who was bothering Chuck Schumer. Not anything we would play on this. She seems very unhinged. We don't condone anything that she said. We haven't even watched the full video. So just to make that clear, not something that is helping at all. There's so much anger out there right now. It's really frightening. But we are going to have a nice civil discussion with our next guest. Carol Markowitz writes for the New York Post and Spectator US. She also appears on Fox quite a bit, and she's hilarious on Twitter, if I do say so myself. It's at Carol, K-A-R-O-L. But she always is holding Andrew Cuomo accountable. Carol, thank you so much for joining us on The Grace Curley Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Carol, I first want to start off with your piece in The Spectator. You have a piece called The Vaccine Slow Roll, and you kind of describe how Ron DeSantis had his own issues, but he was treated very differently than New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. And can you explain what's happening in New York that isn't getting as much play as it should be?
So in New York, we've decided to reinvent the wheel. In Florida, they're vaccinating by age. In New York, we're trying to write all historical problems that we've had through the vaccine process, and that has proven to be kind of difficult. So in Florida, they've definitely had some hiccups, including that they were using just appointment systems that were difficult to use, and old people were showing up anyway, even without an appointment, and waiting on these really long lines. And the media loves long lines, so they were focusing on this and obviously saying what a terrible job Ron DeSantis is doing. But in New York, we only started vaccinating people 75 and over yesterday, and today they finally moved it to 65 and over because of the outcry. And we have just done such a terrible job of getting these vaccines into the arms of people who need them, who are at risk from this virus. And, you know, it's absolutely at Governor Cuomo's feet.
I guess a question that I have for you, because you do explain it in your piece, but the fining that Cuomo wanted to happen if things didn't go his way, he wanted to fine these hospitals. Can you explain to people what would warrant a fine from King Cuomo?
Right. So if you dared give a vaccine out of order, so if you reach the end of the day and you see you still have vaccines left, but there are no more people in the first group that you're supposed to be vaccinating at waiting for a vaccine, he literally had vaccines thrown out instead of just giving them out of order to whoever wanted them. And it's really bizarre that he's treated as some sort of conquering hero when he's done things like this again and again to slow down the process of healing our state and making things better.
Yeah, and you make the remark in your column that on Tuesday, New York Times reporter J. David Goodman pointed out that fewer people were vaccinated in New York City this Monday than last Monday, and he doesn't understand how that could be the case. And then I love the last line of your piece. You said, if the media could just pretend that Cuomo is a Republican, surely they'd get to the bottom of it.
Right. And that's part of the problem with having an activist media who are friends with Cuomo's brother and who looked the other way as his brother interviewed him. My brother would also give me a softball interview if that was the case. But, you know, they don't call him on any of it. He hasn't had any adversarial interviews at all. When a reporter asks him an even mildly uncomfortable question, he flies off the handle and he gets to just coast. And so we're seeing sort of the end of that, where I think journalists are going to have no choice but to say, wait, he's not doing a good job here. These vaccinations are not happening. And he's trying to turn it around, and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, I'm rooting for him to turn it around because I want to see New Yorkers fully vaccinated, and I want to see this thing eradicated.
So, Carol, you also wrote a great piece. It was titled, Florida Puts New York to Shame in Rational Pandemic Policies. And you traveled to Florida for the first time. You were in New York for a long time, I'm assuming. And you left and went to Florida. And you describe that everyone was telling you before, oh, be careful. Nobody wears masks in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy there. And what did you actually see when you got to Florida?
Well, so in New York, we really have this image of Florida as the Wild West and how people are just, you know, basically walking around licking each other. And it turned out not to be the case. So we landed at Palm Beach International, and it looked exactly like New York. Everybody's wearing a mask. Everybody's social distancing. There's hand sanitizer everywhere. And we found that to be the case everywhere we went in South Florida. People were absolutely careful. Nobody wants to get this thing, but it's different. It was different in Florida. It's different because in New York, it's very common to see people on an empty street or people nowhere near each other wearing masks. In Florida, that was far less common. And I think that kind of moderation actually helps because you can't wear a mask 24 hours a day. And so if you're wearing it in situations where you don't need it, you might be less likely to wear it in a situation where you do need it.
Right, right.
So Florida is setting the moderate example, and I think we should all follow it.
And I'm going to read from your piece here. You said the main difference, masks aren't worn in no-risk situations. In Gotham, I'm assuming that's New York City, it's very common to see people masked even when they are alone on empty streets. Small children wear masks outside. In Florida, we saw maskless children playing together outside. It looked like the before times. Which is a good thing. We act like it's no big deal to wear masks, even where risk is non-existent. But of course, it does matter. Explain to people why it matters, besides the point you just made about, wearing it so often that you stop wearing it. But there's also an emotional element of why it matters not to wear it when you're outside.
Yeah. So the next line there is that for the first time in, since April or so, we saw the smiling faces of strangers. It was jarring. We were like, wow, people are walking around and they smile at us. And you could see it now. Whereas in New York, there's just this atmosphere of like misery and you don't get to see people's expressions. And it does matter. The people who say it doesn't, I don't get it. The people who say wearing masks is not a big deal. Of course, it's a big deal. And I do it. And I make my family do it. But it's absolutely a big deal that we can't gauge other people's reactions right now. It's a big deal for kids, especially who can't, who read faces and can't do that right now. And also in New York, again, kids are just treated so bizarrely. My 5-year-old has to wear a mask and social distance at recess at his school, at a school that he attends 2 to 3 times a week at most, while outside. And in Florida, we just saw recess outside and the kids are playing without a mask because that makes sense. And their case numbers are lower than ours. So it's really proving out.
Right. And I totally agree with you, Carol, because I feel the same way. I wear one when I'm in a situation where it's safer to wear one. But if I'm in a field by myself, I don't see the point. And you do see people who wear them in their cars when they're alone. It's becoming very psychological. Yeah. My next thing I wanted to bring up, because I liked this story about Rich as a party, a senior advisor to Cuomo. He was not happy with the comparison numbers. Can you explain to people what happened? So New York decided to close the restaurants and Florida didn't. And when the case numbers came out, it kind of seemed like it wasn't as helpful in New York as they thought it was going to be.
Right. So indoor dining in New York closed in December, right before the holidays, which is their highest season. So it was particularly painful for restaurant owners. And Cuomo's advisor has defended this policy, even though Cuomo himself said that on the day that he closed indoor dining, he said that restaurants were only responsible for about 1.4% of COVID spread. In Florida, they made the decision to keep restaurants open, and they have a flourishing society because of it. And all of their businesses are open, and their schools are open full time. And in New York, we're struggling. And yesterday, Governor Cuomo has the gall to come out and say, we need to open up because, if we wait for the vaccine for everybody to be vaccinated, we might have nothing left to open up. Well, I've been saying those exact words since April. And for him to now say this as if somebody else is in charge is really galling.
No, totally. And his advisor, his senior advisor, when he saw the numbers, because you point out that Florida's policies bore good fruit. On January 9th, New York reported 17,839 new cases. Florida, with about 2 million more people than New York, had 15,445. So his advisor says, rather than say, listen, maybe Andrew Cuomo was wrong about this, maybe we didn't need to kill all these businesses, he accuses Florida of cooking the books.
Yeah, which is absurd. And by all measures, Florida has absolutely had good COVID data. And beyond that, as I say later in the piece, even if you believe some crazy conspiracy theory that Florida's hiding their COVID numbers, You can't hide bodies, and Florida has had significantly fewer deaths than New York, and that's absolutely a fact. And that's related to the fact that they have prioritized older people, the people who are actually at risk, while New York continues to do crazy things, and it's just showing up again in the vaccine process.
And there's also an element that you point out later in your article about trust, the level of trust they had in Florida that their that their citizens would know to do the right thing. And there's no trust in New York. They have to demand people act a certain way. Carol, I also wanted to ask you, you have another story in the New York Post where you talk about the lessons we all probably tried to learn from this very bizarre year that just passed. I want to ask you about one because I've been thinking the same exact thing. You said this: the pandemic was a reckoning for relationships. Which friends did we most miss? It was a social do-over. Can you explain that a little bit?
I've seen so many friendships and marriages fall out over during the pandemic. And in a lot of ways, it kind of brought things to a head. I think a lot of friendships and relationships could have lasted perhaps past the pandemic and a few years later. But all of this would have happened anyway. And I think the pandemic was a clarifier. Whoever you call your best friend, if that wasn't the first person you wanted to see when you were able to, perhaps they weren't your best friend. And a lot of feelings got hurt that way. But I think it really exposed a lot. And people should, you know, kind of look at that as a positive, as it might hurt right now, but at least you know right now who's important to you and who's not, and to whom you're important and who doesn't treat you like you're important.
Yeah, one of my best friends made this same point, and she said that a lot of times she felt like she had to have these meetups with people. You know those friends you meet up with like once or twice a year, and it's kind of the obligatory.
Yeah.
It's like you have this obligation. Okay, I'm going to meet up with so-and-so. We're going to sit down. And when the pandemic happened, you kind of realized, listen, if I get a small sliver of time where I'm allowed out and I can sit down at a restaurant and I only have six people at the table, that person's not making the cut, and that might not be a bad thing.
That's right. That's right. I agree. It's not a bad thing. I think that we should all know where we stand, and that's not a bad thing to find out. And the pandemic, it really showed us who was important to us. I know that I kept reaching for my extended family over and over again. And we always saw each other a lot, but you know, when it was like you can only see so many people, I wanted to be with my brother, my sister-in-laws, and you know, my in-laws and my mom, etc., more than I wanted anything else. So it proved some things out for us.
A social do-over. Guys, Carol Markowitz is fantastic. She writes for the New York Post. She writes for Spectator. Check out her stuff. Follow her on Twitter at Carol, K-A-R-O-L. Carol, how did you get that Twitter handle? That is amazing.
I'm early adapter.
Yes, I'm envious. Let's hope you keep it and big tech doesn't ban you. But thank you, Carol, so much for coming on the show. Guys, we have so much more to get to when we get back. And we, of course, have Howie Carr calling us to tell us everything he's going to be talking about on the show. That was Carol Markowitz on The Grace Curley Show, and we will be right back.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. We had a pretty jam-packed show. Carol Markowitz, Jeff Charles from Red State, a lot of great writers, not all conservative either, but just, you know, people who don't like what they're seeing, whether it be Andrew Cuomo or this second impeachment. But now we have a true conservative joining us, the one and only Howard Lawrence Carr. What's going on, Howie?
I just heard that Mayor Marty Walsh would like to have two elections this year. And, of course, the one that they would probably have in June or July, that would be crazy because no one would have to give up their seats on the city council. So you'd probably have at least 10 or 11 of the city councilors running in it.
What could possibly go wrong?
I know. I guess it's not only Marty, but a lot of the city councilors want there to be two elections so they can take a free shot at it. You know, this is what happens when you have a special election. It turns out to be really special.
Indeed. Howie, what do you think about Bill Belichick declining to accept the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Do you blame him? I mean, you know, it wasn't exactly a profile in courage, but, you know, things change quickly in the NFL. Look at the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. He won the Super Bowl 3 years ago against the Patriots, and then now he's out of a job because he did a really stupid thing in the final game of the year and put in the third-string quarterback. And I guess he'd just been feuding with the owner. I mean, things can change quickly. I know Kraft was basically a Trump supporter as well, but I just don't think he wanted the headache. I mean, discretion is the better part of valor sometimes. I mean, yeah. It wasn't the most courageous thing in the world to do, but, you know, what does it really mean to get the congressional whatever it is, or the Presidential Medal of Freedom? What does that mean?
Well, ultimately? Howie, I said this earlier, but I feel like sometimes I have to check myself because I'm like, oh, you know, why not? You know, you should do something and stand up. And then I think, well, it's easier for me to say. I write for the Boston Herald, and I'm on the Howie Carr Show and the Grace Curley Show, and my job is to be an outspoken conservative.
Right.
But that's not his job. His job is to be a football coach. So if it's going to create so much turmoil, or if he's going to be canceled, which was happening on Twitter, people saying, if he accepts this, that is the last thing I'll ever accept from him.
I thought these people canceled him after he endorsed Trump the night before the election in 2016. Are these the same people that said they were never going to watch the Patriots again? Now they're saying it again.
Well, that's the thing about cancel culture. People have very short memories, Howie, because there's a new cancellation every other hour. Speaking of that, Howie, did you see the article in the Daily Beast about your favorite governor from Rhode Island?
No, what about her?
They wrote kind of a mean piece. They said her state's in a COVID death spiral. Biden just hired her.
Absolutely. I mean, that goes without. It's like the city of Boston with Marty Walsh.
And it says, she's one of the most effective, forward-thinking governors in the United States of America. That was what Joe Biden said in a speech unveiling the pick. And the article goes on to really lay out a lot of these decisions she made. And also, I was so happy because the Daily Beast, I didn't think they would, but they also made mention of that time she got caught having a glass of wine at that paint night.
Yeah, but that wasn't the first time, Grace. I mean, she was at the riots in Providence in the summer. She came out of the Capitol to attend those, you know?
Right. And this is the part I thought was interesting. It said, but when cases began to rise this fall, critics say the governor did too little too late, allowing the virus to get out of control. And her own behavior also left her vulnerable to charges of coronavirus hypocrisy that have dinged Democrats across the country.
I think the biggest problem she has is just that she tried to clamp down so hard at the beginning. I mean, again, she said if you were driving a New York car, you were liable with plates and New York plates, you were liable to be stopped by the police in Rhode Island.
Oh, Howie, they mentioned that, but that's the part about her they really liked. They said she received positive national attention. She also won.
Not for me.
Howie.
I know the ACLU had to be called to give a comment. You know, they should have been all over it on their own, but that's outrageous.
She also.
That's unconstitutional.
She also won headlines for promising to aggressively enforce a quarantine on New Yorkers visiting her state. It's absolutely ridiculous. Guys, HowieKarcher.com. Click on store to get Howie's two books. Don't give in to Amazon. You get free shipping and you get two for $20. This is The Grace Curley Show.